KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack here on KSCU Santa Clara. I am Joan. With me is
Caleb
and
Jason.
That's right. We're back.
Woohoo!
We're always back here on Mondays on KSCU Santa Clara, and we love you for joining us. We've got a wonderful show tonight. If you're unfamiliar with our show, we are a geek-centric talk show. We talk about tech, entertainment, comic books, video games, movies,
space.
DARPA,
comic books.
Space comic books, DARPA comic books.
3D printing comic books.
3D printing comic books.
Or comics about 3D printing.
What?
Comics about 3D printed 3D printers.
That may be a thing in the future, probably soon, actually.
Probably.
Which hurts my brain just a little bit.
Just a little. But don't worry, we'll relax your brain.
Mm.
With some geek talk.
Yes.
We like to do a little... How's everybody doing at the opening of the show? For, like I say, if you're unfamiliar with the show, or if you are familiar with the show, then you know what we're going to talk about.
It's true.
Sort of, kind of, maybe.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps, especially if you listened to last week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be talking about our watch party. Not just yet, but we will be getting to that. So hopefully you tuned in to the first two episodes of Punchline. If not, it's all right. You don't have a chance right now, but... As far as like, you know, watching it right now and then you know,
participating,
but you can do it after the show.
It's still early.
Catch up. Yeah.
You can catch up real quick.
Yes. But besides those things,
mm-hmm.
how was your weekends?
Weekend was good. A nice, fairly low key weekend, which was a nice change of pace. Not as busy as the past couple weekends.
See anything, go anywhere, punch anybody, kick anybody, friendly punches and kicks.
Right.
No friendly punches.
Is there
punches
any
and
other
kicks.
Kind?
I hope not.
It's the buddy kick.
Yes.
Boom. No, we went to go see Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Okay.
By accident.
By accident.
Sort of.
How
does that happen? Well, you start out by trying to go see Ant-Man. And then you get there and they say, there's only 3 rows left. You're like, really? That's unexpected. So then you're like, well, what can we do for what else looks good? I heard that I overhearing from different places. New Mission Possible wasn't bad. Okay, let's try that. Okay, maybe.
Now, but before you get into it, did you see the previous Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol?
Yes.
Okay.
That's, I think, possibly the second one I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I think I saw Ghost Protocol and number 2 or 3. See, that's
a big connoisseur.
The one that J.J. Abrams directed and then Ghost
Protocol.
That's
the third one.
Okay, yeah. So I've seen 3 and 4.
Okay.
Now,
arguably the best ones.
That's
so
what I've heard too.
You did well there at least.
Mm-hmm. Next comments about how the quality of the film may need to be interpreted in light of the fact that I knew. The one thing I knew about this movie going into it was that it was a new Mission Impossible movie.
Okay.
And it wasn't, I heard it wasn't bad. So any glowing reviews may need to be tempered with that knowledge, but I thought it was pretty fantastic.
All right. Oh, fantastic, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it quite a lot.
I was playing off the fact that Fantastic Four came out, and apparently that isn't
and
very
that
fantastic.
That was one of the movies that we considered watching as well.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow, okay.
So, yeah, we
probably made the wiser decision.
Yeah, right. we sort of stumbled into probably the best possible scenario for that.
That's good. So it was playing roughly around the same time?
Yeah, it was like, about an hour later, so we didn't have a...
Okay, never mind.
But...
I thought maybe like 10 or 15 minutes or something.
It worked out pretty well as far as being able to make a run to local Target and hit up all of the
snack foods and stuff.
All the good candies and whatnot.
Yeah, it was fun. So, yeah, that was good. The movie is surprisingly like tight. Like the, a lot of, like, and it's, I liked it because it wasn't super gadgety. Like some of them can like, because like the Mission Impossible movies kind of suffer from some of the James Bond late James Bond movie problem where like there's a gadget for that. There's a gadget for that. There was some gadgetry, but there was a little bit more of the IMF team trying to figure out how to survive the situation, and or we don't have a gadget for that. What do we do instead? So it was kind of nice to see that like kind of back to basics, quote unquote, take on the situation.
Nice. So was the airplane scene pretty cool? The one that all the buzz is about, you know, him being strapped to the outside of the plane.
I don't know why all the buzz was about that one personally, but
I mean, it's a good opening shot, but honestly, I think the rest of the movie is it's so good. Like it's like it needs more buzz than the opening does, because it's like small chunk, good opener, but this movie I thought was really good.
So it's probably just more the fact that he just did it himself, actual strapped outside of a plane.
Yeah, that was probably the bigger deal about it. Because
In the previous one, like hit the big stunt, and that one, like, that was impressive in the movie. Like, it was like, oh, he's on the tower actually doing that stuff. No way in hell would I do that. Oh.
Yeah, you could not pay me enough to do that. So I think that, like, that first bit was like, okay, we're going to kind of have to, quote unquote, outdo our last movie. Okay, now that we've done that, let's get on with telling the story that we've got to tell. And I thought that they did a really bang up job of that.
Nice.
Jason?
Yeah, I had a hard time finding anything that I disliked about the movie at all. Did you see
Ghost Protocol?
And I don't know why that one didn't seem to impress me anywhere near as much as this one. And I think it probably did come down to the sort of same thing that Caleb was talking about. It felt like there was a lot more like reality seat of your pants instead of gadgetry just fixing and filling up the gaps type of thing. And I mean, those movies have always done a really good job of, even when they have a gadget, it's not necessarily foolproof, it's just aiding and so on. But this one had so much less of that. It felt a lot more like, with the newer Bond movies and Casino Royale and whatnot, it's really comes down to the skill of the operators trying to get through it that really brings everything together. And that was the other thing that was nice too, is that this one, I don't know why, but for the first time I felt like it had all through the entire movie a really good back and forth between having a male and a female lead that were just as capable as each other. And that was really cool through the entire thing.
Nice. Yeah, she was pretty awesome.
What movie? There were talks of her like being up for something, some other like bigger movie. I can't remember now if it was another Marvel movie or some kind of,
you know, I wouldn't be surprised after that, because she can definitely hold her own in an action setting.
Without being a previous MMA fighter that I know of or anything like that. Not to discredit those who are. But, you know, I was just saying.
But, yeah, definitely had the acting chops to back it up also, instead of kind of being shoehorned or trained into this sort of thing, too.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing more movies with her. Hopefully she gets a starring role in an action film in the near future. That's what I'm rooting for, Hollywood.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Nice. Yeah, and I already heard talks that they're early stages of the next one, so not super surprising since this one's doing quite well, and you know, positive reviews from not only you guys but from other sources. So
yeah, it will be interesting if they kind of continue this trend, if they end up having, like, since Mission Impossible is a very American thing, they already ended up kind of crossing into other territory by having Simon Pegg added onto the team. And now they have like a British agent that I'm guessing they'll probably want around for more stuff. So it'll be interesting if that ends up being a weird sort of balancing factor, or if there's going to be a different feel to upcoming movies because of it and so on.
Yeah, as we were coming out of the theater, I'm like, dang, if I had known that we'd be going to see this, I would have tried to invite Joe to this, because we thought we were just going to go see Ant-Man, which you had already seen. Okay. So like, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering what in the notes, unintentionally, I was like, what, huh?
Right.
Like, I was confused, like, oh, okay, we're trying to go see a different movie. And then...
Well, and it's funny, too, because both me and Caleb were actually probably more inclined to see a Fantastic Four movie, not necessarily because it was the greatest movie of all time or anything like that, just because outright curiosity.
Oh, okay.
So, and at that point, not 100% of the full force of negativity had rolled in for that movie either. Maybe 30% of the negativity had, but there were some voices saying, wasn't that bad. They were pretty much all dead by the time.
Yeah.
Drowned out in a sea of, what's this?
I imagine that's got to be difficult now, as far as like, you almost, since everyone has been pooping on that movie, and going in, like, you might be like, well, maybe it wasn't as bad as everyone said it was, but like, still like, not very good, you know.
Yeah.
Overall, you know, it's like it's almost, it's kind of stuck. And I've just heard that, like, dialogue is really bad and just, like,
I feel like some of the trailers didn't do it a whole lot of justice either, because there were some really awkward cuts in some of the trailers. Just was like, you can tell these two scenes are not connected, but you're trying to make it go together. And
I've, listening to other sort of geekier podcasts, some have kind of brought up, like, a good point just about the actual like Fantastic Four, how they're just so, the idea of them, they're just so rooted in the 60s. It's like, it's so hard to take them and bring them like
into a modern age.
Yeah. It's like, if you, they gave sort of examples of, if you look at like X-Men First Class and X-Men Days of Future Past and now X-Men Apocalypse, they're taking place in the 60s, 70s, and the 80s. Like, they're using, like, they kind of toss out the idea of, like, maybe they should have gone for more of, like, a Mad Men kind of setting the film in, like, a previous sort of decade, instead of trying to shoehorn the Fantastic Four, like, kind of the original Marvel team, like, into this time. Because they gave examples of just, because I'm not super familiar with the characters, but so it's like, they're, you know, like, you know, Mr. Fantastic, he's, like, pipe-smoking guy, he's, like, only supposed to be a certain age, but he always looked like, felt as like the old guy in the group. And then like his girlfriend was like super younger. And it was just like all the things like about it were just so set in like that era. It's just, it's so hard to like take it. I never really, not being familiar with the group all that much beyond just like, you know, the outside kind of the characters, oh, the Thing and, you know, Human Torch and that sort of thing. Oh, he stretches and, she's invisible, blah blah blah, like, but not really kind of their sort of background and you know, behind them, like, like when they kind of brought that stuff up, like, oh, that's interesting, that kind of does make sense, that, you know, that maybe it would be better to focus, have them more of, you know, someone
from the era in which they were created.
Yeah
That might be something to that. And also, one of the challenges that the Fantastic Four faces is that they're, besides being from the kind of a particular era, is that they're almost more of a philosophical, they're one of the more philosophical focused superhero teams. Like, they have the action side, they got Johnny, and they have the Human Torch and the Thing, but like the two like kind of anchor characters, the leads, Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman, they're both like, all of them are scientists. They're both like about understanding the thing itself, or whatever they're trying to, it's like they're about the, expanding the mind to cope with the universe. And that's a difficult thing to encapsulate into a superhero movie.
Yeah, I think that they brought up, or, you know, other podcasters, is like, they're almost better as like teaming up with other groups, or kind of like a couple of them hanging out with these or that. Like, right now, I think the Thing as part of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes. And, you know, so they've kind of put, like, they've split them up from their team and put them in, like, places. And others just kind of pushing them aside in the comics, like, not even doing anything with them anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, it almost seems like maybe that's a better fit. Like, when you need to deal with space or some kind of science thing, like, you could have Mr. Fantastic with working with Tony Stark or something like that. I mean,
yeah,
you know, obviously they can't because of the movie rights and that sort of thing. But, you know, if it were, if that wasn't
issue. They've done that in the comics, it's actually worked out pretty well, because one of the things that makes kind of Reed Richards more interesting as the big science brain is that he also knows that there's a limit to how much he actually knows. And when, like, he needs, like, advanced particle physics or something like that, he'll go find Tony. Or he needs, this is a science verging on the metaphysical. Go get Doctor Strange. This is, you know, he's like, and that, so they're almost the collaboration point of, like, understanding the Marvel universe, and sort of, so which makes it kind of harder that they're isolated now and over in Foxlandia, or no,
Century Fox.
So maybe they'll have some sort of weird crossover with the X-Men, perhaps, but we'll see.
Yeah, I know that was rumored, but
yeah, that was quashed.
Yeah, just because of it's not doing so well now, so I don't know if they're. Mm-hmm. It is also kind of sad too, because, like, that group has, like, one of the, like, best / most popular villains.
Yeah.
Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom is actually
do anything with them.
Yeah. I mean, Dr. Doom's the core of their latest, like, big summer arc.
Yeah.
It's like, how do these movies not connect at all? Like, there's got to be some way to make this work.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll have to see after what happens with this film, if rumblings talk or who knows.
Yeah. And there's been a couple of, I saw a couple people retweet Josh Trank saying, yeah, there is a good version of this movie. It existed about a year ago. The thing you're seeing in theaters is not the movie that I made.
Yeah.
Slight paraphrasing. Yeah. I don't think that's...
Supposedly that got yanked off of Twitter fairly quick.
Yeah, I imagine so. They'll want the director of the movie saying, yeah, that's not the movie I made.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, we'll see. But here's something we can all say and agree is a positive.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to KSU, even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip.
Search for KSCU. Our call letters are unique to our station on the globe. So say we all.
That's right. Nice. All right. So cool. Sounds like Mission Impossible. New one. Is a positive. Check
yes.
that out. You guys do anything else?
I messed around for the first time with World of Tanks since
It
came up on Xbox One.
Did see you online.
And I can see myself getting very hooked on that game.
Oh, okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it's weird because it's not necessarily because it's fun, and as weird as that may sound. It's... I can imagine it being almost completely as frustrating being somebody who had to pilot one of these things and trying to figure out how to survive in this really odd environment with other people trying to do the same thing against you. Not necessarily people who have the same amount of training as you, but like Germans who have been training for like a dozen years how to pilot their vehicle. It ends up making you feel, in my view, more like you're in an actual military situation than a lot of other games do, just because it's not like really fast paced, like visceral gameplay. There's a lot of like, oh crud, what's around that corner, and second guessing yourself, do I have enough cover, and all of this stuff. It really puts you into that tank a lot better than a lot of other games I've ever messed around with.
A strategic shooter, you're saying?
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of, like, we were joking around about how we used to play Scorched Earth with each other. And it's not necessarily the same type of gameplay, but it is a lot of the same sort of trial and error as far as if you're a new player trying to figure out how to leverage the good abilities of your tank, because all of them are good at something. Like if you have a really small cruddy tank, that also means it's more maneuverable and a little bit quicker than anything else out there.
So not super familiar with the game, and for the audience, like, so kind of a basic thing of what the game is. Is it, does it put you on a map with X number of other players or something?
Pretty much,
or is
it on the surface, it's just a really plain multiplayer tanks versus tanks game with pretty well thought out maps of classic locations in World War II and thereabouts.
Okay.
And
so that's kind of the era it set in.
It starts out with pre-World War II or pre...
post-World War One,
post-World War One tanks, stuff that existed in that sort of weird little limbo time where people were all like really getting ready for war, but they didn't necessarily have the best weapons in the world to do it with.
Gotcha.
So everybody was like building, like all these crazy machines, but they were nowhere near as refined as the stuff that you end up seeing at the very beginning of the war because there was still a lot of iterations that ended up happening in between those two points. And that's kind of the fun of the game, too, is you have to develop a tank from whatever country you want, their, like, first cruddiest tank that they had.
And
you follow the line as it zigzags through all of the different series of tanks that country created.
Okay.
And so you have to actually do the research and spend the time to learn the tanks and their powers and whatnot in order to get on to the next one. And so it makes you feel a little bit more attached to whatever vehicle that you have also, because you earned it a little bit more.
All right, I can see that.
So, yeah, it's staggeringly up my alley. I would not have expected anything so slow to be so, like, oddly visceral in a weird sort of way.
Seems to be scratching an itch, kind of. But most of the games you've been playing recently don't really address. I mean, like Destiny, it doesn't seem like it's...
That's true. Like, everything that I've been playing lately has been very much, like, Twitch shooter, like, instant gratification. And this is not that by a long shot. And in all the right ways, it seems like, too. And plus, it seems like it really helps also just because they do have the crossover with the 360. It allows you to have that batch of players on there as well.
Got crossplay?
Exactly.
Oh, nice.
So it
makes... Wow, a game that actually does crossplay.
Well, within the same ecosystem, but still.
Still, it's that's cool. More than you usually get.
Yeah. I'm so glad that they did, because that system obviously had a big extra chunk of time to play this game and have people that are really dedicated to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they end up being like your Russian tank commander or your like German tank commanders that are like really scary.
Like, oh no, it's a 360 player.
Right. Yeah.
It's a Tiger 2, but it's not moving like a Tiger 2. Oh no. Oh no. He's from a 360.
But, like my own personal niche, that it's nowhere near anything that I would probably normally do, but I've really enjoyed for some reason, is doing artillery tanks.
Okay.
Because they're... Huh. I think it brings back the orc player in me. Because
I was going to say.
so much of it, like orc from Warhammer 40K, back in third edition rules for anybody who's like, well, how would that be an orc thing?
Yeah.
For me, it's
whatever
very much an orc thing. Anyway, but there's so much randomness, and you just really hoping that that shell will hit like another person.
Okay.
But because they're gigantic guns, if that shell hits somebody, they're pretty much dead meat. It ends up being a lot of fun. And plus, being able to shoot over a mountain is pretty handy, too, in a game like that.
Yeah, especially when you're not as agile as a lot of the other players.
Yeah, and they sort of treat the artillery as if you have aerial support helping you figure things out. When you're, like most things, it would be you pull the trigger for aiming, kind of like a normal first-person shooter, and you'd be focusing a little bit more.
Okay.
But with artillery, when you do that, it's a top-down look at whatever tanks are actually spotted by other players and so on.
Last question. So is it, are you on a team or are you against, is everyone against everyone?
It's been on a team. I think it's like a, like 12 versus 12 or 16 versus 16, something like that.
Pretty impressive.
I may be completely off on those numbers, but that sounds right for some reason.
Okay.
Basically, you end up seeing all of the different types of playing card symbols, which represent different types of tanks. Plus, I think a square is the artillery.
Mm.
So five different types of tanks. And the entire top of your screen is lined up with like green and red and like the good and the bad guys. And so it's an easy indicator, and there's a lot of them. So yeah, it's a pretty big fight.
Cool.
Yeah.
All
right. What'd you get up to?
Nothing really worth. I played some more Witcher 3. I think I'm getting close to the end of the main story.
Okay.
Right.
Are you feeling satisfied or already thirsty for more?
You mean like more?
Like DLC and stuff
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the next, like, or I guess the first actual expansion for it.
Okay.
There's supposed to be two of them. One is like, they say 10 hours, and then the next one is supposed to be 20 hours.
Oh, wow.
So,
that's fairly big.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I'm worried is I don't think I'll reach the next version of the armor that I have by the time I finish the game, like the main story. I think I'm like level 25 and it needs to be level 29.
Oh, okay.
In order for me to wear, you know, to wear it.
Right.
So, and I think I'm pretty close to the end. And so I don't think I'll, you know, have enough by the time. So at least I'll have it for the expansions.
Uh-huh.
But
I guess you could always grind for a little bit and then...
Well, that's the thing in that game, like killing creatures don't give you any experience points unless it's part of a mission.
Uh-huh.
So there's like, you know, it's good to explore because then you might find like treasure or stumble on other missions, but it's not really like, oh, I'll just go and like try and find a bunch of monster nests like...
Okay.
I mean, like, destroying the nests give you a little bit, but yeah, it's like just going around and killing, like, a random group of, like, five drowners or something like that. Like, it doesn't give you
anything. Yeah, it's not like Final Fantasy, then, when you go find, like, the little, like, blobs and just keep whacking those until you level. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. So, anything else you want to mention before we jump into the watch party, or...
One quick thing.
Okay.
If you are a user of the Firefox web browser, you need to update immediately.
Immediately.
Okay.
They found a flaw which is allowing high level files of your system to escape. These are used by developers. So most common users won't be accessing these files much, but nevertheless, keeping hackers out of your system or out of access to your system is a good thing. So
it won't, like, I know it has the things where it'll update automatically.
Yeah, so just go to, hit the about, or, you know.
So just make sure you have the latest version.
Make sure you have the latest version,
okay.
39.0.3. I believe is the current version. That's the one you want. That will close that hole, so that way you will keep all your files intact.
Nice. All right.
Sounds like a positive thing.
Yeah, probably a good idea. Not good when hackers get your information. But here's some information everyone should have. If you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. Your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimalavocates.org or look for them on Facebook. All right. So, anything else?
I can't think of anything else? Actually.
All right. So, let us jump into the watch party.
Yes.
I don't want to say anime watch party just because it's not always going to be anime. It just happened to be an anime this time.
This
we figured
time.
It'd be the easiest thing to draw from since there's so many choices.
Yeah.
We did a little roll off last week and I happened to win it this time, and so I selected an anime called Punchline.
Yes.
And we watched the first two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I marked them down.
Yeah, you did. It's
episodes 1 and episodes 2.
Episode 1 is called Panty Panic.
And the second
one is called The Lace of Compassion.
So let's hit episode 1 first.
It sounds like there's a theme going
on. Yeah. Just a little bit. So episode 1, Panty Panic.
Mm-hmm.
We start off with our hero riding a bus.
Right.
Yes. And
as heroes do.
As heroes do.
Right.
Quote unquote hero of the story, our protagonist.
Yes.
Right.
So riding a bus, and then it's like, it's being hijacked or something. Like it's being held up.
Hijacked.
Right.
Yeah. Terrorists pop up, masks, guns.
Yeah. They're fairly run of the mill terrorists. Like you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then like, I know. I mean, you know, feel free to jump in, but I know like a superhero chick pops in with a giant straw.
Like
that was pretty funny.
Like a magical girl, like level hero, like type of thing. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I think like orange juice themed.
Her name is.
Is her name Strange Juice or is it the name? Like I was trying to figure out.
The hero's name is Strange Juice.
Oh, her name. Okay, I wasn't sure if that was her name or like the name of her group or
something. That's how I took it for some reason, was that it was the name of a group that isn't necessarily assembled yet. So I don't know.
But, okay, that might be true, but since they're not assembled yet, there's only one.
Yeah.
It's her.
So
right.
So yeah, you know, they're fighting and stuff like that, and then the...
Which, very, very, very well animated at this point.
Yeah.
Pretty animation for that first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, I'm trying to remember, like, I know the scuffle and stuff. And
yeah.
Then
fights off all of the
kerfuffle.
With all of the terrorists with a giant soda straw. A bendy straw, no less.
A stout bendy straw.
Yeah. And
not as in the drink, but.
One of the. There's another person on the bus that, like, the hero tells to go to stop the bus because apparently the driver got, like, mind controlled or something, and, like, he's, like, attacking her. And
that's right.
There's a lot of things that happen that don't make any sense.
There's a lot of goings on.
What's going on here? And then, of course, like, the real mastermind of the attack, like, pops up with the gun behind.
Right. Because all of his minions were thwarted, so, you know.
Yeah.
If you got to get something done, you got to do it yourself type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in classic, like, anime bad guy, very mysterious, big grin on his face, just constantly.
Yeah.
And you can't figure out why. It's like, why he's been soundly beaten. Why is
he's up to something.
He manages to get the upper hand, and that's when our protagonist kind of. Rockets into the fray.
Yeah, he sees some underwear of the main character, and
then
suddenly kind of goes a little Saiyan, a little Super Saiyan, a little bit.
Right,
hair turns like red or something like that.
Turns bright like flame red.
Yeah,
and the animation for him, I love it so much. It's like him just standing up, but it's sort of like these ripples of power are going through all of his clothing, and he does sort of. Like a little bit of a neck, like crack thing, like, yep, I'm ready now. And then.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to remember, like, his name was like Yuten or something like that. But anyway, I know, like, he gets somehow, like, he gets knocked out of the bus with the.
Launches himself at the mastermind character.
Right.
And then. Well, it gets really weird, which is saying something, because it's already strange.
It was already odd to begin with. That's just the setup for, like, how powerful apparently he can be, and for kind of the core of who the characters he's going to associate with are, because it ends up being at the end of that episode and into the second episode.
Well, before we get to the second episode, we'll just focus on the first one. So when he lands in the water, though, like the bad guy, like you see him whisper something.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it jumps to like
a mysterious thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no sound, but you just see the mouth move, the camera,
right.
You know,
right.
Close
Classic.
Up on the mouth, of course. And, you know, we jump back to the protagonist, but then there's like the cat, which is so far my favorite character, spirit cat. And then like Mankara looks down and he doesn't have like the bottom half of his body, and he's flipping out, and the cat's like explaining, "Oh, you're a spirit now, blah blah blah, and
something took over your body."
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he mentions like, "Oh, something took over your body," which I assume is the bad guy.
That would make sense.
That's what I'm guessing.
Although it
is.
Came from space, like it came from above him, like this beam of light comes down and strikes his body.
My theory is just that, like, whatever that guy whispered, like.
Okay.
You know, enacted whatever is going on. I could be wrong,
right.
But
yeah.
I'm assuming that whisper.
It was the
something.
Placeholder for when his body became empty.
Yeah.
Then he can take over.
So,
maybe.
So then the rest, pretty much like the rest of that first episode is focuses mostly on our protagonist and kind of explaining his situation and like if he gets super excited. Like, if he gets excited, he does the Super Saiyan thing. But then if he gets, like, super, like, overstimulated, a meteor, like, crashes.
He
on
causes the end
Earth.
Of the world.
Yeah, destroys the end of the world. Just as you do.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that was funny about the show. Yeah, I was just like, what? And the cast is like, don't overthink it, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the main character is literally freaking out about the plot.
Yeah.
As much as you probably are.
Yeah, I did... With that episode, like, they play up, like, it's definitely, I mean, when you watch the show and just, like, oh, any sort of synopsis or present, like, oh, he gets super sad when he sees panties. So you're like, okay, obviously that fan service, that's going to be a theme of the show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, just focusing on the first episode for now, like, I was kind of curious how they were going to handle the rest of that. Like, the first episode, they do, you know, they set up some shots, and I think they do a pretty decent job as far as like,
not completely unrealistic.
Yeah, but just sort of how he sees, and then you know, we should say though, when he does blow up the Earth, he does have the ability to go back a little bit in time, but only a little bit because his like spirit level is super low, and the thing that he has like a level that pops up over his
head. He's leveling up like a video game character, which is pretty hilarious.
And he's like, wait, where'd those letters come from? The cat's like, that's your digestion.
Yeah. I like to do when the cat like would go like, hey, okay, let me show you, like when he's giving him exposition, you're like, oh, okay, let me explain this thing, and he goes online and it's cats hearing each other both times. And it's like, you did that on purpose the next time.
Why did you show me that?
Yeah.
The cat just it just ignores him and closes the window and goes on to the next thing.
Yeah. So yeah, it pretty much like, so your thoughts on the first episode, were you like interested in seeing the next one? Did it grab you, or
it made me curious like where the second one is going to go? My sensitivity to fan service is relatively, my abrasion to it is fairly high. So I was like, I hope this doesn't become one of those shows. And I was actually rather impressed that it wasn't pushing it as far as it could. Like, I've seen some where it's like, I'm like, wow, you took that fan service and turned it to 11. This one's like fan service level 2 to 3.
Right.
Like, it's noticeable.
Yeah.
It's part of what's going on, but it's not like so high that I'm like turned off by it. So it's like,
by having the plot the way it is, it has a built-in kill switch that you can't go too far effectively, at least not for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, it ends up being kind of clever as far as that goes, as far as keeping people in it who may not be as into the fan service-y stuff as most, but having just enough that the moderately pervasious can not like.
Yeah, and I was curious too, like how was it like, oh, okay, is it just going to be just like, are they just going to create like situations where he has to like, oh no, I can't look like, and that's what the rest of the show is going to be. But I think now moving, I mean, unless there's anything else you want to say about the first episode, moving into the second one,
right.
You start to get a little better idea. Like the second episode, it focuses on each of the girls. Cause I can't remember if they did any in the first episode, but they did some flashbacks where he like kind of meets each one.
Right.
And he's living in this apartment sort of complexy thing.
Like, right. Yeah.
And
that's one of the things from the first episode too, is that he is in apparently the apartment above his old apartment, and he can no longer access his old apartment anymore because it's being lived in by whoever is taking over his body.
Yeah.
And they've used seals,
yeah, right?
Spiritual
right.
seals against him.
Yeah, like you see at Fisherman's Wharf, like
no, like smack. If you watch anime, they have the paper seals with right. Writing.
Oh,
on them.
Yeah.
And his goal right now is to find this book. Mm-hmm. What was it like?
The
Gandal something.
Gandala
made up
Gandala Lambala or something. Like,
yeah, some Indian sounding book about how to retake over your body, supposedly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're in exactly the same situation that he's in.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing that book existed.
Yeah.
And again, I think that was one of the things that the cat was just like, don't think about it too much.
Yeah.
There's a certain like self-awareness that this anime has that is kind of a growing trend in the funny ones, it seems like.
Yeah.
Which I rather appreciate. Helps it overcome some of the fan service-y stuff too.
Yeah. So yeah, with this one, it starts to focus more on the girls of this group and
right.
You kind of,
which to me has been the thing that has hooked me farther into the show. Like I the premise is funny and everything,
mm-hmm.
but by sort of getting to know all of these other characters, that's what's kind of made it more interesting to me. Like what makes them tick and so on.
Yeah,
and so yeah, by the end of the second episode, you've basically learned what makes one of them tick, and it's very strange and funny at the same time.
I think like my favorite part, or one of my favorite parts of the second episode, is when I forget her name, but the one who may or may not be Strange Juice or whatever, who's like
right,
the superhero,
yeah.
when
right.
she does her transformation, yes. like thing, and it shows, you know, it's all
actual
lasers
sparkles.
And lights and sparkles, and then like a second screen right. over in the corner, actual footage.
Right.
And it's just
as
her
if
twirling.
It's a TV with picture in picture,
yeah.
too.
It's just like, her twirling in her room.
Right.
With
her friend, like
with
just
friend.
Looking like moderately
yeah.
frustrated at
like,
her.
Is the dance really necessary for this?
And
but
then
I'm
a lamp.
Hero. This is the part of the transformation.
Right. And then a ceiling lamp just opens and her clothes just like plop on the floor. Whereas
yeah,
the full transformation is like the bodysuit magically bonding to her and all of this other stuff. Like very, her entire idea of it is very anime. But
yeah. Yeah. And then there's the one like who's hiding a little baby bear,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
For some reason that was found, that they're gonna look into that. That maybe that might maybe that's gonna end up being some other part to.
I think the bear is probably the book.
Oh,
that's my
a good theory. That's
thinking
a good theory
because it's the weirdest thing that I can think of.
It's true
right now, and usually they give like the clue for these things like in the first or second episode. And at the end of the series, you're like, oh, it was there all along. So we have a bear. So, yeah, bear book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the protagonist, like, did the cat show him how to move stuff in the first episode or the second episode?
First.
First? Okay.
Because he moves, rolls a ball of yarn, which triggers one of the
right.
gag, one of the fan service gags.
Right. Okay.
That was probably my favorite fan service gag. I will not deny that.
It was one of those like, I was like they stretched that the delivery of that gag quite a while. I'm like, when is that gag gonna like fulfill? Like seriously? Like yeah, there it is. This is pretty good, though.
Yeah, I love that.
It's an interesting, weird blend of like the like high tech, like Power Rangers sort of like gadgetry, and then like Lovina, like human interest stories.
Yeah,
sort of like kind of this curious, like weird blend of all these different types of anime.
Yeah, it'll be interesting finding out exactly, like, what brought all of the different girls in the apartment together, since they seem to be more interconnected than they've necessarily let on either.
Yeah,
and definitely the original two, the one who's like the motorcycle driving crime fighter, and then what was the secret in like the secret name of the other one with the sweatshirt gag? Or the sweater.
Oh, man.
I can't remember if that
was something pumpkin.
We're still new enough into the series that's like to be track of some of the names.
Oh, like Golden Pumpkin or something like that?
It's possible.
Anyway.
I'm so bad with names with anime. It takes me a long time to like remember
stuff. I completely relate. I'm bad with names just in general. Yeah. So.
Did you appreciate the whole cinnamon thing?
I thought that was pretty good. I was... It was a good, I don't know, kind of a throwback to the spice in a weird sort of way for me also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
And so, yeah, it was layered and beautiful to me in a lot of different ways. So, yeah, what he's referring to is that apparently cinnamon is a shortcut to gain...
extra power, spirit power.
Like momentary extra spiritual power. Mm-hmm. If you're like of the ghost persuasion or the soul persuasion or something like
spirit
that.
Spirit person.
Yeah. Yes, that thing.
Although like that even sort of could just be not true either. It's right. Like, wasn't it the cat sort of like, yeah, it might help.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Something like the cat.
The inflection with the cat is pretty difficult to figure out too, because yeah, the cat is a little bit not cool with people.
Yeah, it's like yeah, there was, and then they have one of the women living there, her family is a long line of priestesses and stuff, mm-hmm. and she apparently doesn't have power, but like there's sort of hints that she might, because you know, mm-hmm. There was one point where they made it seem like she actually heard him. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, that's true.
And
so she seems to have some sort of
attuning.
Yeah,
yeah. So I'm sure that's gonna
the word that she uses that throws me off is necromancy. But we'll see if that ends up being more in the Western version of necromancy or not.
That more having to do with just the connection with the dead more than anything else.
Right.
But
yeah. You know. And then there was that, what was it, Charmancy or something? That the other
Cheermancy.
Cheermancy, yeah. That's it.
Yes!
the day which
was the finale of the second episode.
Yes.
And it was pretty good.
My favorite thing about that, like, watching it on Crunchyroll was that before it jumped into the commercials, because I don't have a paid account, there was this brief, like, split second of just like the pigeon of a pigeon head, like filling my entire screen, and just like, pigeon head, the heck, and then like bobbing his head along, and then like it cuts the commercial, like, what is that gonna do with anything?
Yeah, it looks like the show does that, because in the first episode it was a shot of panties. like oh, what are these gonna be, like, are these like, oh, they're actually relating to the episode.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the seer girl does a weird little dance with a pigeon head on as part of her necromancy to try and summon the main character into manipulating a vase, which he accidentally shattered one already.
No, he's the one that broke it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is he accidentally shattered one already.
I don't think it was accidental.
Well, he was just trying to move it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he, like, shattered it, and that's when his level went,
like,
way
high, too.
Because I think
that's when, because the cinnamon was in there or something, or something.
I think it was supposed to be.
I was there, what I, maybe I'm wrong, but I got the impression that the cheer, the necro, like there's a close, like wording wise or something, because it, to me, it seemed like she confused. Did she confuse what she said? Like, cause sometimes in anime that since you know, like I'm, you know, watching the sub, mm-hmm. there's like translation thing where they'll have like a word that sounds almost exactly like this other, you know, yeah. other word. And so like they kind of use that as comedic.
Yeah. I think there is a pun.
Is there,
but I don't recall what the actual phraseology was, so...
Well, yeah, and it's impossible for us to really know for sure what the original was because we're watching it with English subtitles.
Yeah.
And it's almost always something completely different whenever you actually see the Japanese way it was phrased. And that's what creates those moments like, okay, I have no idea yeah. what just happened
yeah,
there.
Like I wasn't sure if she, like, thought... Because she had the pigeon head on...
Mm-hmm.
Like she misheard her and thought she said necromancy, but she was saying charmancy. Or
no,
she,
it was
yeah. Well, which she did it just to cheer her up.
Yeah, right?
And then she's
but
she was really drunk at the time too. So
yeah,
she,
I know. But that's what I mean. It's like I know she was doing it to cheer it up. I'm just the drunk one. If she why I meant like going with the words is if she misinterpreted the word, thinking like. Oh, you're doing necromancy up? Like, I wasn't sure if that was, like, if they were trying to do that kind of joke. Or...
No, I think it was more just, at least, I think the way they wanted it to be was that, okay, she acknowledged that, okay, it's kind of cute that you guys are, like, changed the word on me and whatnot, but she kind of shrugs it off until okay. they actually do it.
Because I know that, yeah, they do, like, the kanji or whatever, and then they say, mm-hmm. like, charmancy and do it and then necromancy. So that's where like my okay. confusion was like, oh, are they implying that like the words are very similar and so like you could get it confused?
Probably, and it
might
have been one of a few times where they were able to make it like really close in the English translation. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I think also my suspicion is that it was actually like there's a like the symbology and like the inflection that one might put on it could make it sound similar enough that if you were not really paying attention or inebriated you might be you might mistake one for the other. And also it implies that she's just desperate enough to try and figure out how to improve her, yeah. her spiritual standing. It's just trying anything.
Yeah, no matter what it's
good joke.
Yeah,
it's funny to watch.
Off. Yeah. They pulled it off cleverly. So yeah. So far, I mean, just you know, with the two episodes,
it's been pretty fun. Yeah, trying to watch the one character try to distract everybody from her having a baby bear in her room was thoroughly amusing to me. Also.
Making the noises. Ah, that's me. Ah,
right.
I'm scratching my back against the wall. Rushing around. Ah,
right.
Gosh,
while eating
out.
A raw salmon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're all like, she's freaking out. We need to help her. Look at her.
Right. Yeah. She's like, no, I'm perfectly fine.
Yeah.
It all has a perfectly normal explanation.
Yeah. It'll be interesting and see how. And there's always the. It has a lot of classic anime tropes in it, like they're playing off of and with the not the least of which is the harem anime, which is the same vein from which you get it traces its roots back to Love
basically
Hina
one
and
boy
to,
and a bunch of girls
and Tichimoyo and it's got a long and grateful long lineage.
Yeah,
right.
It hits a lot of those things, but yeah. Well, and then just the whole like superhero thing and that she might be doing stuff. So they've thrown
a lot
of stuff at us.
It's a lot of genres.
Yeah, they've thrown a lot
of
stuff at us.
A lot of genres.
We'll see how well it all comes together as we progress. So if you did happen to miss those first two episodes, it's not too late to join us.
It's fairly easy to catch up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're watching again. We're watching Punchline. We're going to do episodes 3 and 4. Talk
yes.
about them next time.
Right.
So jump on board with us. And if you did watch episodes 1 and 2, Let us know what you thought. And how can they do that, Caleb?
The best way to do that is on Facebook or Twitter. If you want to do it right now and let us and like interact with us as we talk, as we've talked about it, facebook.com/robotsattackshow and twitter.com/robotsattackme, all one phrase. Those are the two best ways to get in touch with us right now. If you want to get in touch with us later, you can do robotsattack.me. That is our own website. You can leave comments, find archives, and do all the other cool stuff there as well.
That's right. And we're just talking about episodes 1 and 2 right now, so please no spoilers. Just focusing on those if you've happened to watch the whole series yet. But yeah, so we'll be back with more of that next week, episode 3 and 4. Looking forward to see what all happens. All right. So we're going to take a music break.
Yes.
And then we'll come back with some new releases.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. All right. You're listening to KSCU Santa Clara, Robots Attack. We'll be back with more.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at RobotsAttack.me.
The Tony Award-winning San Francisco Mime Troupe opens with its 56th season of free shows in the parks with their new 2015 show, Freedom Land. The show runs from June 24th through September 7th. For a complete schedule, visit www.sfmt.org or call 415-285-1717.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSCU Santa Clara. Let's get into some new releases. All right, first off in the theaters, we've got The Man from U.N.C.L.E. in the early 1960s, CIA agent Napoleon Solo and KGB agent Yali Kuryagin are forced to put aside longstanding hostilities and team up on a joint mission to stop a mysterious international criminal organization which is bent on destabilizing the fragile balance of power through the proliferation of nuclear weapons and technology. Duo's only lead is the daughter of a vanished German scientist who is the key to infiltrating the criminal organization, and they must race against time to find him and prevent a worldwide catastrophe.
I love that the actors are Superman and the Lone Ranger.
Sure, yeah.
The Lone Ranger is Russian in this.
Oh, boy.
It'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Yeah. And then we have Straight Outta Compton. In the mid-1980s, the streets of Compton, California, were some of the most dangerous in the country. When five young men translated their experiences growing up into brutally honest music that rebelled against abusive authority, they gave an explosive voice to a silenced generation. Following the meteoric rise and fall of NWA, Straight Outta Compton tells the astonishing story of how these young men revolutionized music and pop culture forever. The moment they told the world the truth about life in the hood and ignited a cultural war. Then we have Mistress America. Tracy is a lonely college freshman in New York, having neither the exciting university experience nor the glamorous metropolitan lifestyle she envisioned. But when she is taken in by her soon-to-be stepsister, Brooke, a resident of Times Square and adventurous gal about town, she is rescued from her disappointment and seduced by Brooke's alluring mad schemes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the small screen is your your silver of choice, you might consider Hot Pursuit on Blu-ray and DVD. A straight-laced cop must protect a debutante drug dealer's wife from crooked cops and assassins as they make their way across Texas.
Ooh.
Or if you want something a little more wholesome, you might consider I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story. It's on DVD. For 45 years, Carol has been the voice and the motion behind two of Sesame Street's most beloved characters, Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch.
Wow.
This story follows his path and shows insights into his early collaborations with Jim Henson. And more than anything else, it shows us the heart behind the love of Big Bird. Then perhaps you want something, maybe you want a little, not quite so touchy-feely, maybe Match on DVD. Toby is a successful, if eccentric, ballet instructor in Manhattan. This comfortable life is interrupted by a young couple that shows up under the pretense of making a piece about his life. But this turns odd when the couple reveals a secret that ties all their lives together. And a complete departure from all of the above is, well, I guess sort of, Police Story, Lockdown, on Blu-ray and DVD. Life has been hard for Police Chief Zhang Wen. His success and his work ethic have kept him from his family. On this night, he is seeing his daughter and her fiancé. But the fiancé has known the Chief Wen, and it is not in a good way.
Oh.
And then we're rounding
dun,
out.
Dun, dun.
That doesn't have anything to do with the Police Academy series, does it?
No. This okay. one features Jackie Chan.
Or the
Chan.
Upcoming movie.
So okay. it's kind of oh, okay. a different direction.
That also answers then it's not part of the police squad or files of the police squad, Naked Gun or anything. Okay.
Nope, none of those.
Just want to clarify for the audience.
Yes. And rounding out the list is Unfriended. I mean, Unfriended.
Whoa.
A Blu-ray and DVD. 2 years ago, a video went viral that pushed a girl to commit suicide.
Viral.
Now her spirit is singling out her old friends and bringing them into the afterlife.
I'm singling you out.
Afterlife.
Whoa.
Okay, and meanwhile, in the happy-go-lucky world of video games, out this week, we have number one, as happy-go-lucky as you could possibly get, Toy Soldiers War Chest.
Yes.
Woo!
Coming out on Tuesday for all the current gens and the PC.
Streaming that baby this week.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
Spy
out for that.
There are 8 separate armies that you can choose, but let's face it, the ones that everybody are excited about are number one, G.I. Joe, number two, the Starbright Army.
Nice.
Which I will be rocking. And number three, He-Man.
Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, now your ultimate childhood epic battles can be fulfilled.
They have a really, it's weird, they have Ezio in there too, as one of the ones. Yeah, they have like Assassin's Creed, like assassin guys. It's like, okay, like why not?
I guess there were some action figures, so.
It's just so odd. It's like, G.I. Joe, He-Man, Starbright, like, you know, it's Ezio from Assassin's Creed. Like, oh.
Is he auditory? What are you doing here?
I'm rolling with it. next up, we have a little game called Bedlam. It's based on the same named book that walks through the evolution of FPS gaming from the viewpoint of a woman stuck in those games.
Interesting.
That comes out on Thursday for current gen and PC as well. Next up, we have Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. That comes out on Tuesday on, I believe, PlayStation and Vita. It's a first-person exploration of a world that only voices and ethereal lights populate, from the makers of the Fear-Filled Amnesia game.
So it's nothing to do with that city beneath the sea?
No. Not that we know of. yeah. And it sounds like it's not even necessarily anything to do with the religious connotation of it either. It's kind of loosely based on that sort of idea. Next up, we have Sentris coming out on Wednesday. This is a Steam Early Access game, but it looks pretty solid so far just because it has a fairly simple premise, and that is to solve puzzles generated by moving orbs while creating soothing music.
Yeah, sounds kind of like Chime.
Yeah, sort of. It's really pretty looking. It looks like some sort of operating system from Mass Effect or something like that.
Fun.
Yeah. Next up, we have a few games that are making the transition from one system to another, possibly from another.
To another.
Or from another. Anyway, number one, we have one that I'm probably going to be getting into now that I have access to it. Fallout Shelter hits Android on Thursday. Next up, we have Goat Simulator. The PSers are going to finally be able to play with goats because it comes to the PlayStation ecosystem on the 11th. Next up, we get Brothers making the jump to current gen consoles also on the 11th.
Cool. Well, continuing on the slightly interesting and fun, unique visual trend, we go to comic books. Over at DC, it's DC Comics Bombshells number one.
Whoa, there you go.
That's out?
It's dropping this week.
Actual physical copy?
Yes.
Okay. Because, well...
No, it just sounded funny. That's all.
Okay. Because they've been releasing the digital ones like before, so I was curious what...
Yeah. near as I can tell, this is a the list I get is the print editions, and then sometimes they'll have digital tacked on.
Cool.
Should mention that when they come up. But this one's all these are all physical copies. Cool. The floppies, as they call them. This new series goes beyond
floppies.
A unique aesthetic for figurines, and it is an alternate history while World War II is fought not just with GIs on the ground, but with heroes on the front lines and back at home. The story begins with Batwoman, Wonder Woman, and Supergirl.
Yeah,
it kind of reminds me of if the BPRD series was adapted into like DC Universe or something like that.
Okay, could be.
Yeah. I have to decide if I want to wait for like the trade or if I want to get the individual ones. Like, I saw when I first heard about it, I was like, yes. So cool. So I like the designs.
The design style for that, the design language for that series is going to be pretty cool. Then over at Marvel, it's A-Force number 3. A-Force is on the run. Suspicion has fallen on She-Hulk, and this has brought the focus of the Thor Corps upon them.
The Thor Corps.
The Thor Corps, the police of Battle World. But as the team unwraps the mystery, it appears that one of their own has thrown She-Hulk under the bus.
Oh.
Metaphorically speaking, because the bus would not survive if She-Hulk was...
Yeah, it's interesting from other like comic podcasts and stuff that I read. Like, there's been a lot of... I never would have thought of this, and I feel bad since I'm just not really being familiar with the character. But apparently, She-Hulk, like, they've done semi-recently or lately, like... a really good job with that character. Like, they've made her, like, really good. Like, I was like, whoa, okay. I never even... You know.
Her latest
it makes
incarnation...
sense. I mean, with this series, them giving her a much more high leadership role.
But, I mean, just, like,
even leading
past,
up to that.
Like, yeah, like they did a really good job with her, like, being a lawyer and, like, giving her, like, really interesting storylines and stuff. And
yeah, and I think some... It seems like the best She-Hulk stories are when they sort of embrace the ridiculousness of a supermodel-shaped, super-powered lawyer. Like, just run with that wild idea and see where it takes you, but still tell good stories along the way. And that seems like what they've been doing more of lately. So, good on you people.
Nice.
Cool.
I'm
still not in love with all the names of all of those series. very cool ideas. I love the ideas. Not thrilled about the names.
The Thor Corps?
The Thor Corps. I love the idea. I'm not sure I'm in love with the name.
Oh, come on. It's got Frog Thor.
No.
Thor.
I have no problem with the idea
rolls
behind
it. Rolls off the tongue.
It.
Thor Corps.
Yeah.
It does.
Or Aiden. Yeah.
A-Force? No. Anyways, King Tiger is also out from Dark Horse. Secrets are dangerous things, especially when you are King Tiger, mystic warrior and sorcerer.
Whoa.
And this secret could do more than just shame him. It could affect his destiny.
Wait, was that one of the bad guys in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out?
There may have been someone named that. I don't remember well enough. Then there were, over from Image, besides New Walking Dead, there's something else you might want to check out because Walking Dead's almost kind of sold just on that premise alone. It's Dream Police number 7. Joe and Kate go deep into the dreamscape, farther than anyone has dared before. Here at the fringe, thoughts off limits, they hope to find together information that they need. But as one might expect, their actions do not go unnoticed, and the nightmares may be their end.
Ooh.
And finally, wrapping up with IDW, it's X-Files season 11 number 1. Conspiracies abound, and now Mulder is at the center of the bullseye. He's now being mentioned to the same breath as Edward Snowden and Julian Assange.
Whoa.
But Scully has his back, and with the help of other allies, they will clear Mulder's good name and defeat the plans of the glasses-wearing man. Now, there's a name that needs a little bit of work.
For a second, I thought you were going to say the plans of Snowden. Wait, what?
Nope, not this time.
Oh, I should say, I didn't get to mention this during Comic-Con, but I grabbed a couple of trades, and like I finished the second trade of Saga, which for anyone who knows much about comics, like I already know that that's awesome, so recommending that's like, okay, that's not too surprising, but I did pick up the first trade of Rat Queens. Awesome.
Really?
It
looks pretty good.
Yeah, I can't wait to grab the second one. Yeah,
sweet.
It's great. But All right, that's comics?
That's comics.
Okay, I will wrap us up with some Muzak. We've got Morning World. That's Morning World, not what you might be thinking. By Teen Days. It's the fifth full-length release for the solo project for Canadian artist Jameson. Was recorded and mixed with John Vanderslice.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Drop the mic.
I dropped the phone mic.
The phone mic.
I think there's a mic on there.
There is a mic. At least one.
So in a way, it's sort of like that.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Let's just move on to the next part.
Yes, yes. Which is Radio Stream. Want to listen to KCU even when you're not near a radio? Stream us whenever you want at KCU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. And now we go.
News.
That's right. We are in the news. Let's news the people.
Alrighty. I'm going to start with space search on Earth.
What?
And not just space search on Earth. It is also a potential glimpse into the early formation of life on our planet.
Okay.
NASA has an astrobiology team, which I
don't believe it.
That I think is just that right alone is pretty awesome because that means they're looking at biology outside and inside. The atmosphere. What they've been working
not
on recently.
Inside your heart.
There's
where it counts.
You can feel it there as well. But what they've done recently is they've been making experimentation into the chemical chimneys, for lack of a better phrase. Like when you may have seen like.
Aren't all chimneys chemical chimneys?
Smack the. in the ocean, there are these places that where there are vents that spew out all kinds of
under
minerals
DC.
And chemicals, and they're usually referred to as chemical gardens or black smokers or similar things. And these are locations which are yes, it's because the substance they emit is dark. And it looks smoky. It's not any sort of
okay.
We got you.
Yeah,
our audience got you. They're smart. They're
anyway, these exist on the ocean floor, and they found that they have unique properties, and they are one of them is that they actually generate a certain amount of electric current, and
that could be handy.
Yes, this electric current. Is also necessary for human life, for not just human life, but life as we know it on planet Earth, because we transmit almost everything about ourselves internally, and the brain interacts with the body through effectively electrical impulses.
This is getting into Doctor Strange territory to me.
And this is, which is why you can hook up the brain to a series of electrodes and you get the scans, and you can also use it to control like mechanical devices as well, because it's all still it's electromagnetic pulsing, and they think they may have they have actually been able to create these chemical gardens in a test tube, and light an LED using the current from their little chemical garden, and it's fascinating. Like with this, we can actually start looking for. Like the types of minerals and things that might be useful for life on other planets as we start examining them better. Now that like Kepler and the other exoplanets studies have started to yield results that are much more like Earth than we ever thought possible. Now we have more that we can look into to say like, is this actually Earth viable? Could we colonize, et cetera, et cetera? Or could this be like beginnings of exterior life like us, which brain exploding there. So
it's not about getting a bunch of brains to power streetlights.
No.
Okay.
It's not about, we're not trying to turn the human body with a unique form of fusion into a battery.
That's Matrix. Good. That's good.
This is, yeah. But
most people don't like that idea.
No. Generally,
most
not.
People. There are there's outliers.
Yeah, not
red pill, blue pill.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
green
yeah.
pill.
NASA science purple from pill. Space to the place where we live.
Not that blue pill.
It's all about. It's all good news. It's pretty exciting.
Okay. Cool.
I think Jason's got something exciting for us.
I believe so. I'm just going to say it right now.
Oh.
White lasers everywhere.
Everywhere?
Everywhere.
Even in here, in the studio?
Eventually.
Oh.
Not at this moment.
So do we need to queue up white lines?
That would be actually really good. Yeah. Anyway. Anyway, we'll just end with that. As far as the not
we'll
the
go
white
on.
Lines.
Go on with your story.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, geniuses at Arizona State University have figured out how to use semiconducting materials in order to make filters to create laser lights of any color they wish.
Any color.
Any color.
Whoa.
So by having the different filters made of semiconducting material, it allows them to have very miniaturized light-shifting lasers, and it allows something that has been almost unknown to science until now. That's right, the white laser.
Oh.
Because, I mean, effectively all you have to do is combine all of the colors in the white right
ratios.
The red
laser, the blue laser, and the green laser together to make... white laser.
Exactly. So why
form
is
of the why, head.
Why is this important? Well, because white lasers are cool, number one. Well,
yeah.
Sounds like a superhero or something.
But the other side of it is that technically lasers are much more efficient than any other form of light because they're freaking lasers. So if you can manage to make them in a small enough package and be able to use them in shifting light, you can do all sorts of interesting things, like make the next generation of viewing monitors or lighting sources.
There you go. There you
out
go.
Of this sort of thing. And by using these semiconductors that allow them to shift light, that's kind of been the big step forward, because previously they were able to create a white laser every now and again, but they had to have monstrous machines that shifted the light in just such a way. And that's no good because you can't put that in your home.
Yeah.
You can't put white lasers everywhere if nope. you're going to do that. So you obviously can if it's much smaller. And people are already coming up with all sorts of crazy ideas on how to use this sort of light, because a laser is effectively so densely packed light energy. You can do crazy things like have your Wi-Fi turned into Li-Fi.
What?
Well, that's actually how they, that's what they do use for communicating with the satellites. And,
exactly.
There you go. Space.
So you can space. You can do space stuff in your own home.
Wow.
Eventually.
Eventually. The last bit's on there.
Sometimes.
Eventually.
It's going.
But yeah.
My laser.
But yeah, the interesting part of it, if you're not familiar with all of the space stuff, like our good friend Caleb is that since it's so densely packed light information, you can effectively have one laser providing light for a room by having the laser split widely over the room, but still have it so densely packed that you create a wireless signal for anything that's under that light.
Nice.
So
the Internet of Things could actually be powered by light or connected by light.
Yeah, imagine that if it was both a solar-powered item that was also Li-Fi. Man, that's double whammy.
That's a double, yeah, that's some double whammies.
Like, wow.
Anyway.
Spacey-wazy,
so
timey-timey.
If you thought current Wi-Fi was pretty fast, this could do it anywhere from 10 to 100 times faster as far as a communication source. So,
nice.
Eventually.
Well, there you are, then.
Nice. Well, we go from white lasers to cracking down on revenge porn across Bing and Xbox Live.
Good things, too.
Microsoft,
we need different lasers for those people.
Yeah. Microsoft has granted victims of revenge porn the option to remove sexually explicit content of themselves from its cloud services. The new powers come by way of an online form that allows users to report instances of sexually explicit photos or videos of themselves. The form also includes a section for users to include related documents, including police reports and restraining orders. As well as deleting offensive images from both OneDrive and Xbox Live, Microsoft is also willing to remove such material from Bing search results. Microsoft's chief online safety office, Jacqueline, we'll just go with that. Jacqueline detailed the new procedure in a blog post. Quote, "We want to help put victims back in control of their images and their privacy." It's not clear how Xbox Live is used to disseminate revenge porn, nor to what extent. Microsoft is the latest in a long line of web-based companies taking measures to combat revenge porn. In March, social media site Twitter banned the practice, while internet giant Google took the decision to delist revenge porn results from its search engine. So, there you go.
Maybe they're just getting ahead of the curve. Like, we don't want this to be a problem, so we're going to stop this right now.
Right now. Get it ahead of time.
Yeah.
It's a good place to be ahead of the curve on things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you can start implementing those things, especially with the dropping of the Windows 10 and just getting everything going, like, best to nip it in the butt now before, like, it gets too late and ruins more people's lives. But here's something that can help people's lives.
Improve.
Yes. Yay. People and animals. Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? You can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. They're hoping we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with their network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook.
Very cool. Okay. Oh. Next up, we have a story that is near and dear to my heart. Unfortunately, we have heard the death knell of Columbia House.
Oh.
Yes, Columbia House. Purveyor of fine records and DVDs and VHS cassettes for many a year, has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in the very close past. At its peak.
So wait, I can't get 10 CDs for a penny anymore?
They got out of that business way back in 2010, actually.
Oh, wow.
You can't even do music through them anymore. But yeah, at their peak, in their heyday, back in 1996, they were pulling down $1.4 billion with their just send us one penny deals.
Dang.
And I will admit I did that my fair share of times, both. Mm-hmm. I did it multiple times for CDs and once for DVDs, where I ended up mostly buying anime stuff.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then for like a good year and a half after that, had random crud that I didn't want sent to me over and over and over again, like many a people. Mm-hmm. But apparently people don't like that all that much because it didn't prove to be a winning way to get sales, because just this last year, the company declared a net revenue of only $17 million. Which still seems like a lot, but when you were doing like $1.4 billion, the $17 million is like, oh, we might as well just get out now.
Yeah.
You know, we have to deal with all these pennies still. It's like, that's not cheap.
The warehouses that are holding all those pennies.
Yeah. So, yes, everybody, moment of silence for Columbia House.
Pour out a roll of pennies on the floor for
right. him. Right. That would be good. A roll of 40s pennies.
Yeah.
I don't know if they make a roll like that, but
no,
they
it's
should.
Usually a roll of 50.
Only you can shortchange them.
There you go.
I guess that's
just
what
keep 10 of the pennies.
Sure. Let's see. From things going under to things going up again.
There you go. Way to stay positive. I was really down about the entire Columbia House thing.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for being here.
Sure. Here to tell you about a robot that is building parts for space. Now, this may not sound entirely
true.
No, it's entire, it's completely true. The, it's a new robotic arm that is designed to make parts out of carbon fiber string effectively.
Oh, okay.
They're it's a new robot made for NASA's JPL lab, I believe, and they're making carbon fiber materials.
Oh, okay. It's a carbon fiber 3D printing extruder.
Effectively, it has like a whole a big giant loom of spools of carbon fiber threads that are attached to the robot arm, and then it weaves them into a pattern and lays it down and creates objects out of that. It is like you said, it is in the same general vein as a 3D printer because it's a rapid prototyping device, but it also makes production ready materials when it's done. That makes it kind of unique in that sense. And one of the reasons why this is kind of exciting is that a lot of people are looking at carbon fiber based materials as one of the ways that we can make rockets lighter, more efficient. And that's really important when every single gram of material it must be accounted for when making the jump from ground to beyond atmosphere. And if we're going to get from here to Mars, we're going to need something that gets us either up to the space station and then onto Mars or whatever. But a light, strong, efficient means of travel is going to be really important. And carbon fiber may be one of the materials that we use to do that. And it is.
I completely disagree, but hey, whatever. Oh. Who am I?
It can currently make the largest, it's the largest of its type right now. And it makes,
is a very cool machine.
It makes objects up to 63 feet long, I believe.
Whoa.
Or it's a 21-foot arm, 40-foot track, 26 feet. Sorry, 20. You can build objects to 26 feet long, which is still fairly impressive, considering that it takes something the size of a warehouse to 3D print some of the larger objects that have been tested. And so, and the fact that it makes production-ready objects when you pop them off the cylinder is pretty impressive. Go. Yeah. So there you go. More space, and robots.
Yeah, they're all in one story.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a question for you.
What's that?
If you had, you were in court and you were in trouble, but you had the option to request trial by combat, would you select it?
Trial by combat?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I'm not sure how I feel about trial by combat.
Well, apparently, Staten Island attorney Richard Luthman has requested the New York State Supreme Court allow him to settle a court case in a fight to the death.
Okay.
According to The Wrap, Luthman, a self-proclaimed fan of the HBO series Game of Thrones, has been accused of aiding a client in fraud. As means to solve the dispute, he has requested to resolve the matter in a trial by combat. Court filing states, defendant invokes the common law right and demands his common law right to trial by combat as against plaintiffs and their counsel, whom plaintiff wishes to plead into the trial by combat by right to right. The lawyer claims that because the court has never outlawed the practice, he should be able to settle the matter in a fashion similar to the conflict resolution process seen on Game of Thrones. Quote, since 1776, no American court in post-independence United States to the underside knowledge has addressed the issue, and thus the trial by combat remains a right reserved to the people and a valid alternative to civil action, he said.
Wow.
So there you go.
I was wondering if he was going to use Game of Thrones rules or classic Klingon rules, but...
Oh.
Wow.
Because the Klingon ones that were, you got to do it yourself, right? Or can
I
you
believe
have...
so. You can't have proxies in that stuff. That's just lame.
So yeah, would you go for the trial by combat?
He'd do it.
We'll throw
I can
in
see
and
it
say
in his eyes.
It doesn't have to be to the death, but
okay, removing death from the equation makes it a little
it's
bit more palatable.
It's just like you gotta like the person can't really get up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Either you or the other person can't really get up on their own.
Mm-hmm.
The stakes would be exactly the same as whatever level of sentence you're.
See, yeah, it seems you like got an 8-count might be a reasonable.
You
took
some gum from a drugstore.
Trial by combat.
You want trial by combat?
Not for that.
You got a red. You ran through a red light. You know, officer. That's what you want. You know, you want to fight this ticket. You want to trial by combat?
That sounds like a questionable choice right there.
Okay.
Well, speaking of unquestionable choices.
Yes.
Yours.
Your story. I was giving you a segue.
Well, I actually had one already just off of that.
Oh. Okay.
Speaking of somebody who has, in fact, done a trial by combat.
Oh.
Nice.
Well, I mean, within the confines of a television series.
Ah.
Peter Dinklage has been in the news this past week for something that I really wasn't expecting at all, and I think a lot of people were pretty surprised by, and that is that he is being completely and totally written out of Destiny.
Wait, what?
That's right. You heard me correctly. Destiny is completely and totally removing Peter Dinklage from its entire script.
Huh. Rationale, please.
Basically, it comes down to that a lot of people complained. On top of that, they were able to pull down some fairly big and popular talent right now in the realm of Nolan North. So,
okay.
So yeah, they got Nolan North, famously known as Nathan Drake, also very dashing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna have a very charismatic and dashing little robot now.
All right.
Maybe, I don't know. We'll see what direction they go with the acting. So yeah, with the new release of The Taken King coming up in September, they are going to have North revoice all of the previous lines and add dialogue so that he can play off of all of the new characters that they've added in the story thus far. So that's where it kind of makes a little bit more sense.
So it's like a full reset of this character.
Yeah, pretty much. And I can imagine it being kind of the smart choice too, because maybe at the point before when they had Dinklage record for the ghost that is your constant companion, mm-hmm. they thought, well, it'll be easy enough to get him in, do re-recordings and whatnot. But in the meantime, there's been this barrage of hate over his voice acting. And so maybe he's not so keen on doing that voice acting anymore. Not to mention that he's also quite popular in the movies and the televisions and whatnot.
He has gained a certain amount of popularity lately.
Right. So why does he even need to do this that he's already been much maligned for? So thus, we have Nolan North. It's already been kind of joked around with by the writers and artist of Penny Arcade about Nolan North trying to re-record all of this footage and people giving him these crazy cues like, okay, you've just lost your best friend and this is the most horrifying thing you've ever seen in the world, and what you feel like you're completely tortured by this new information. And it's just him saying something along the lines of, it's a triptych of ruins. And then just pelting him like, no, you need to have like all of these feelings about this thing that you see. And Nolan North just like, okay, it's a triptych of ruins. Anyway, I thought it was a pretty good take on it. And I'm one of the rare people who actually didn't really find all that much wrong with it, because I thought it portrayed a robot pretty well. But yeah. I guess robots are supposed to be like really jazzy and so on. So
I guess so.
You need a Nolan North bot.
Well, everybody wants a Nolan North bot, but not everybody gets it.
But the thing that I am generally looking forward to is having the little robot actually interacting with all of the other characters that you're talking to from now on, because that was something that was missing from the DLCs that they had in the previous two DLCs. So now that I know that's going to be both in the DLCs now and in the future stuff, I actually kind of feel like going back and starting a new character just to see.
Yeah, I've heard
start
that.
To finish.
People mention that, like, oh.
So I hope they open up one more character slot for people like me, because I don't want to get rid of a character either.
Yeah, that would be harsh.
What are you limited to? Are you?
It's three slots. Okay. Yeah, unless you switch to a different system or function under an assumed name.
Oh, okay.
Which is more difficult with an Xbox One when all of its cool points are actually like starting up for you. And so
yeah.
On.
Yeah, it could be a bit of a challenge.
Do you have any more stories? Or
I have yeah, I got one more. So a while back we saw there was that video that came out with Tony Hawk and
Hawk Tony.
No, the Doc Brown
Christopher Lloyd?
Christopher Lloyd.
Okay.
You know, that video that was so full of, well, not truthiness that the internet kind of fell over itself.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but okay.
You don't remember the video that had both of them together, like talking about this new hoverboard, and you can totally tell they were on cranes and special effects.
I never saw it.
Mm.
Okay. Well,
I don't know how to use the internet, people. It's a miracle I pulled together stories that I get for you.
It did inspire several people to create a more plausible functioning hoverboard that wasn't completely full of untruthiness. And is Lexus it? Was oh, okay. one of the companies that decided to at least fund the search of a hoverboard. There was a they got in contact with a science group out in Germany that's working on maglev transit systems and super cooled semiconductors.
Okay.
And they As made a skate park in Barcelona, outside of Barcelona, that was set up to have this board move across it, and it works, but it's not that great.
Okay.
It's not cool is what you're saying.
It is still a far cry from Back to the Future Part 2.
Okay.
And it's one of those things that, like, the thing on itself floats, moves along, it actually looks pretty cool if there's no person standing on it, but you put a person's weight on it, and the author described it as trying to balance on a tightrope. And then when you try to push with your foot, you end up like just kind of like clunking the board into the yes, into the pavement. Now, he did say that when he just sort of balanced on one foot and just sort of like kind of like let himself slide and just balanced on one foot, he actually got a decent slide. But it's calling it a hoverboard and then expecting it to be like Marty McFly's board, again, that's, you know, obviously a stretch because movie magic. But this one looked like it was closer to being that, and it's still
basically
stumbles.
You're saying this one's for babies.
Yeah, it's like a baby's toy. You got to use your hands.
It's
well,
not,
just like
it's not so.
You
bad.
Put babies on it, like a baby could probably ride it really well.
Yeah, something
baby that doesn't weigh that
they
much.
Have really good balance,
or something that's going to be held stationary by an object that could be placed at the top of the board.
And so just put your baby on and push it, and then it'll
right.
Like
everybody go to Barcelona, do your Barcelona
baby
boarding.
Look at that baby riding that board. Oh man.
Yeah, apparently the biggest
hashtag
like,
Barcelona baby boarding.
In some ways, the biggest disappointment though
that's
is
a
that
big
this
hashtag.
Is it really is. It's a lot of bees.
Just baby
is
boarding.
That it's,
hashtag baby boarding.
That makes it sound bad somehow.
But that thing though, that'll get people's attention. Like, wait, what?
Is that what we're doing to
Social
terrorists
justice
now?
Justice warriors, whoa, boarding children. What is? Oh, now internet.
It's holding babies over people's heads.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so afraid.
Anyway,
I'll tell you anything.
So yeah. The biggest disappointment in some ways is that this is really just all a publicity stunt. There isn't anybody. This company didn't actually commit to creating a hoverboard. They just wanted a publicity stunt.
Should have went with the cranes.
Yeah. That's
Michael J. Fox.
But in any case, it's still kind of cool that it did work at all. So there's that.
Yeah.
That's good.
And maybe it'll show up in This Day in History someday, which I will wrap us up here on KSU Santa Clara Robots Attack. All right. In 1821, Missouri became the 24th state in the United States.
Yes, it did.
And then, jumping to 1846, the Smithsonian Institution was established in Washington, D.C. from funds left by British scientist James Smithson.
Okay.
Huh. Think about that, huh? Interesting. Well,
That's pretty good.
Then we go
that's still around.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then we go to 1921. Franklin D. Roosevelt was stricken with polio at his summer home on Campobello Island.
Oh. Yeah. No longer around.
Yeah.
Not as big of a deal as Smithsonian.
And then in 1944, U.S. forces seized Guam from Japan.
Then, Guam is still around, though.
Yes, it is.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Then 4 years later.
Wow. Okay, just four years later. I'm counting the fingers that you're holding up.
Candid Camera with Alan Funt debuted on television.
Okay.
Then we jump 40 years later.
Right.
1988, President Reagan signed a bill that awarded $20,000 to each survivor of the Japanese-American internment.
Oh, okay.
Then, rounding us out in 1993... Ruth Bader Ginsburg was sworn in as the second female U.S. Supreme Court Justice.
There you go. Still around.
Still That's around.
Cool. Still around.
And I think they're making...
Like Guam.
I think they were thinking of making a movie about her life.
Oh, well, that would be kind
of I think there were rumors of Natalie Portman playing her.
Okay.
Huh.
It's obviously her younger
suddenly
self.
Suddenly interesting.
That's to say.
I mean, they could put her in age makeup as well and for later parts, but...
Yeah, I'm sure they'll do that.
But so...
Any chance to make her look horrible, people just jump at it.
Do they?
Of course. It just happens all the time.
I don't know that. I did not recall this.
Right. Yeah. Can they put her next to a Hemsworth?
all right. That's right. Okay. I got you now. Okay. Well, on that note, that's been Robots Attack for us. Thanks for tuning in. Caleb, I know the show's over with, but of course the internet is always open unless it gets attacked by DDoSs or gets switched off or something.
And even then, it's still kind of open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just still there like Guam.
But technically, it's still there. Yes, like Guam. So...
Stop. If you wish to get in contact with us via the internets, you can go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow. Or twitter.com/robotsattackme. But if you just want one thing to remember this, robotsattack.me. That is where you'll find the archives of our show and where you'll find all the ways to get in contact with us via social media and or email.
That's right. And don't forget, remember, episode 3 and 4 of Punchline next week on our watch party. So
that's right.
Take a gander and... communicate with us. Let us know what you think. All right, that's going to do it. On behalf of myself, Joe, Caleb, and Jason, thanks again for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and we will catch you next time. All right, take it easy, everybody. Raccoon. Veronica. Nicto.